I have to turn to the other side of the coin to discuss Timmy Butterworth. He was a wire-haired fox terrier who resided in Gimber's Yard, one of the little cobbled alleys off Trengate, and the only time I had to treat him was one lunchtime. I had just got out of the car and was climbing the surgery steps when I saw a little girl running along the street waving frantically as she approached. I waited for her, and when she panted up to me, her eyes were wide with fright.
"I'm Wendy Butterworth," she gasped. "Me mam sent me. Will you come to our dog?"
"What's wrong with him?"
"Me mam says he's et summat."
"Poison?"
"I think so."
It was less than 100 yards away, not worth taking the car. I broke into a trot with Wendy by my side, and within seconds we were turning into the narrow archway of the yard. Our feet clattered along the tunnel-like passage, then we emerged into one of the unlikely scenes which had surprised me so much when I first came to Derby. The miniature street with its tiny, crowded houses, strips of garden, bow windows looking into each other across a few feet of cobbles. But I had no time to gaze around me today, because Mrs. Butterworth, stout, red-faced and very flustered, was waiting for me.
"He's in here, Mr. Elliot,"
she cried, and threw wide the door of one of the cottages. It opened straight into the living room, and I saw my patient sitting on the hearthrug looking somewhat thoughtful.
"What's happened then?" I asked.
The lady clasped and unclasped her hands.
"I saw a big rat run down across the yard yesterday, and I got some poison to put down for him."
She gulped agitatedly.
I mixed it in a saucer full of porridge, then somebody came to the door, and when I came back, Timmy was just finishing it off."
The terrier's thoughtful expression had deepened, and he ran his tongue slowly round his lips with the obvious reflection that that was the strangest porridge he had ever tasted. I turned to Mrs. Butterworth.
"Have you got the poison tin there?"
"Yes, here it is."
With a violently trembling hand, she passed it to me. I read the label. It was a well-known name, and the very look of it sounded a knell in my mind, recalling the many dead and dying animals with which it was associated. Its active ingredient was zinc phosphide, and even today, with our modern drugs, we are usually helpless once a dog has absorbed it. I thumped the tin down on the table.
"We've got to make him vomit immediately. I don't want to waste any time going back to the surgery. Have you got any washing soda? If I push a few crystals down, it'll do the trick."
"Oh, dear." Mrs. Butterworth bit her lip. "We haven't such a thing in the house.
Is there anything else we..."
"Wait a minute." I looked across the table, past the pieces of cold mutton, the tureen of potatoes and a jar of pickles. "Is there any mustard in that pot?"
"Aye, it's full." Quickly, I grabbed the pot, ran to the tap, and diluted the mustard to the consistency of milk. "Come on," I shouted. "Let's have him outside."
I seized the astonished Timmy, whisked him from the rug, shot through the door, and dumped him on the cobbles. Holding his body clamped tightly between my knees and his jaws close together with my left hand, I poured the liquid mustard into the side of his mouth, whence it trickled down to the back of his throat. There was nothing he could do about it. He had swallowed the disgusting stuff, and when about a tablespoon had gone down, I released him. After a single affronted glare at me, the terrier began to retch, then to lurch across the smooth stones. Within seconds, he had deposited his stolen meal in a quiet corner.
"Do you think that's the lot?" I asked.
"That's it,"
Mrs. Butterworth replied firmly.
"I'll fetch a brush and shovel."
Timmy, his tail tucked down, slunk back into the house, and I watched him as he took up his favourite position on the hearthrug. He coughed, snorted, pawed at his mouth, but he just couldn't rid himself of that dreadful taste, and increasingly it was obvious that he had me firmly tagged as the cause of all the trouble. As I left, he flashed me a glance which said quite plainly, "You rotten swine." There was something in that look which reminded me of Magnus from the Drovers, but the first sign that Timmy, unlike Magnus, wasn't going to be satisfied with vocal disapproval came within a few days. I was strolling meditatively down Trengate when a white missile issued from Gimber's Yard, nipped me on the ankle, and disappeared as silently as he had come. I caught only a glimpse of the little form speeding on its short legs down the passage. I laughed. Fancy his remembering! But it happened again and again, and I realized that the little dog was indeed lying in wait for me. He never actually sank his teeth into me. It was a gesture more than anything. But it seemed to satisfy him to see me jump as he snatched briefly at my calf or trouser leg. I was a sitting bird because I was usually deep in thought as I walked down the street. And when I thought about it, I couldn't blame Timmy. Looking at it from his point of view, he had been sitting by his fireside digesting an unusual meal and minding his own business when a total stranger had pounced on him, hustled him from the comfort of his rug, and poured mustard into him. It was outrageous, and he just wasn't prepared to let the matter rest there. For my part, there was a certain satisfaction in being the object of a vendetta waged by an animal who would have been dead without my services. And unpleasantly dead, because the victims of phosphorus poisoning had to endure long days and sometimes weeks of jaundice, misery, and creeping debility before the inevitable end. So I suffered the attacks with good grace. But when I remembered, I crossed to the other side of the street to avoid the hazard of Gimba's yard. And from there, I could often see the little white dog peeping round the corner, waiting for the moment when he would make me pay for that indignity. Timmy, I knew, was one who would never forget.